Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with David Strickle, the Stream of David, and this is your daily dose of happy. We're so happy you decided to join us today. I was really happy to join David on Saturday because he had a special summit, a special Stream of David summit, along with some of his good friends who are some of the most amazing minds in the whole LOA business. Some of them I didn't really know. One of them I did, our friend Dan Mangana. And, I was telling you before the show, David, there were a couple of things I really loved. First, I didn't have to publish anything. Second, I didn't have to lead anything. I could just be there and be a part of it. It was a blast. I mean,
it's nice to be a guest on someone else's show. I can tell you firsthand. You just show up and do your thing and have fun.
Yeah, you just show up. It's great. Plus, you had some great people in your audience. I recognized a few who are LOA Today listeners, which was great. So yeah, it was really good. So thanks again for inviting me on. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and when you get that kind of think tank together, I knew that we were going to go really, really deep with the stream, and we did. And I went back and watched it. I was really blown away with a lot of the things that came out, a lot of just great thought and ideas, and it was just a great collective. And it is on my YouTube channel. If anybody wants to go see it, it's up on the YouTube channel now. It's Creating Your Bubble of Reality from Saturday the 17th of October.
Okay, good. Yeah, and well worth it too. I mean, it was like a 2-hour session, but you know, it's like the shows here. You know, an hour flies by. 2 hours isn't all that much longer. It just keeps, you know, flying right on by. It got to the 2-hour mark. I said, wow, was that really two? Holy cow. But it was good. It was really good. So, as we were starting the show here, I was looking at, first of all, we have a few questions for the stream, which is going to be great, and we'll make that connection. I was also looking at another one that somebody had sent in from one of the YouTube shows that Dan Mangana was a part of, where we were talking about the money game, and I was going to save this one for him, but I'm thinking I may do it twice because it's a really good question. And as I mentioned to you before the show, it's about lack, and you just told me, well, I just did a whole thing about lack, so you're all warmed up on it. I figured, well, let's take advantage of the fact you're all warmed up. Let's see if we can go a little bit deeper. So this person writes under the name Sahasrara, 55. And let's see, the message says, hi, guys, I'm watching the episodes in a scrambled order, meaning the LOA Today episodes. Today I went looking for this one because a friend of mine and me are interested in testing the money game that is often mentioned. Lack is an important term in this story, which brings me to my own story. My father is someone who weighs every purchase carefully and mainly buys things because of their practical use. And even then, there's an internal discussion, a need to convince himself. Oddly enough, he makes decent money, which seems to make the weighing exercise redundant, but obviously it doesn't, and it doesn't seem to coincide with his worldview of lack. I took over this stance and still live it today. I was raised to not waste water, electricity, other resources, and I apply it to the degree of denying myself things I'd like and fussing about it all day, every day. Listening to this episode rekindled a thought about the environmental movement and whether this movement is something that people perceive more when living in a state of lack. Interesting question. My boyfriend, for instance, does he buys what makes him happy, and I sometimes berate him for it, poor guy. Well, I should probably follow his example. It's hard enough to ignore these facts that I perceive of planetary resources being limited, but I guess LOA states that I only perceive them because of my state of mind. So does this mean that others don't perceive it, or is it something less than that? Could you explore this topic in a future episode? So I'm going to run it by you first, David. You want to take a swing at this question?
Well, what I found is that we get what we believe. So if we believe that if we are frugal and watch every penny and hoard money, that hoarding money is going to give us some sort of a satisfaction, we're going to create that reality for ourselves. So it's not about thinking being extravagant is necessarily the key to abundance, nor is pinching every penny the key to abundance. It depends on your belief system. If you believe that if you work hard and go to the right school and get the right job and save your money, if that's your belief system, you are going to create that as your reality. I come from my family like that. My father and stepmother and sister and brother are all the same. My father just turned 80 on Sunday, and I put together a Zoom meeting for all of us, and we're very rarely in the same place at the same time. We're not a close-knit family. Anybody that read my book knows why. So we all got together, And I am such the black sheep, the oddball out of all of them. One's an attorney, one's an accountant. My father was a principal. My stepmother's a librarian. Just imagine all of that.
And yeah, right.
Channel.
Right, right, yeah.
So even though I worked a corporate job for many years, I never lived and operated my life the way they do. But they're all very financially secure. I always earned more money than all of them, but I spent more money than all of them. I spent very freely, and I'm sure that my financial situation has had peaks and valleys that they've never encountered. But they all have this belief system of working hard, staying in the same job. All of them did. All of them, same job, 30-plus years, every one of them. And I was almost on that track myself until I disrupted it. And that's their belief system, that they have created this upper middle class lifestyle by saving money and pinching pennies, and they live in nice homes and drive new cars and all that stuff. But that's their beliefs. And I realize that that's their belief system. So everybody has a belief system that they operate on. And if your belief system is that if you save and pinch your pennies and save money, that you're going to be okay, then that's going to be your reality. If you believe that you are always going to be in a state of lack because you can't afford anything, that's a whole different mindset.
Yes.
That is a whole different, there's a whole difference between I don't want to spend money on that, I would rather save it, and I can't afford it, I can't have it, I'll never have that, I'm not worthy of that, people like me don't get that, I can't imagine having something like that. You know, I hear things, I think I was telling you about the Facebook comments that I was discussing with you before we went on live. People saying things like, we don't have two nickels to rub together.
Right.
And people do not realize what they're creating for themselves when they say things like that.
Absolutely.
And it's almost like they're saying things like that, almost in a vibration of self-pity, and they're creating that reality for themselves. That they're going to continually create a reality where they are looking for pity externally for the situation that they're creating for themselves. And there's almost a soothing mechanism built into that. Oh, woe is me. Feel bad for me. Look how horrible things are for me. And a lot of our society operates like that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do. And they create that reality to keep themselves stuck in that scenario, not necessarily because I think it's really because they just don't know any other way, and they don't trust enough to put themselves out there to believe in a different way. And it feels better to feel like a victim than to take responsibility and say, well, I created this situation. What happens is when people take responsibility and say, I created the situation, inevitably they go down this path of beating themselves up about it, and it doesn't feel good. So they want to revert back to the other way, which is feel sorry for me.
Yep.
But you can accept that you created something unwanted in your life and not beat yourself up over it. And that's why the Stream's teachings about vibrational flow and high and low and judgment and all of that stuff, I think, come in handy, because it really gives us clarity on we need to stop judging ourselves. Even if we have created a bad situation that we've stuck ourselves in for a long period of time, let's stop judging ourselves about it. And let's start focusing on what we want rather than what we don't want, rather than beating ourselves up for doing it wrong for X number of years.
That's a great description. I really like it. Your description in many ways touches on what my life experience was for a number of years, although my life experience was a little different. And let me tell you what was different about it. I did work, not so much a corporate career. I worked more in small businesses, working for a lot of very small businesses for most of my life. And then I did end up in a mid-sized corporation where I made the best money I ever made. And then at that point in time, that's about when the internet was starting to take off. That was like the turn of the millennium. I mean, it had been building up before then. I'd been doing some stuff with it, but nothing really serious. I had started a little business selling long-distance services back when that was a thing, and that had made a little bit of money. But mainly I was just making my money through what was eventually that mid-level corporate job. But I didn't enjoy it. I actually didn't enjoy much of any of the work that I did. And at the time, I would have told you it was because, well, I know I'm good at stuff, so I have to go earn my money doing the thing that I'm good at. And I won't get the opportunity to do what I really would like to do. In fact, I don't even know what it is that I would like to do. I can't think of a job I would like to do that you can get paid for, which shows how I was limiting it. It had to be something I had to be paid for, right? Well, I ended up taking the leap after working that, that last job, in part because I was miserable there. I mean, I was making good money, but I was not enjoying myself. There was nothing about it that I was enjoying. And also there was handwriting on the wall, because this is when a lot of corporations here in America were starting. I worked in the IT department, and a lot of IT departments were starting to reach out to India and bring in, Indian workers because, well, they were cheaper. They were, you know, like 2/3 the cost of what we were. You know, so they were making their move in that way. I could just see that's where it was all going. So, you know, when you're in a job that you don't like and that you don't see a future in, and you can't see how you'd enjoy it, and they're about to, you know, displace you anyway, you kind of start thinking about doing something else. And that's what I did. So around that time, I figured, well, you know, I've been messing around with making my own websites. I'll become a web designer. You know, that's a thing. There's going to be a lot of design for, you know, a lot of demand for websites and so forth. And so that's what I did for about an 8-year period. And that's how I became full-time unemployed, or not unemployed. Well, yeah, in some ways I was unemployed.
That's called a Freudian slip.
Yeah, right. Very Freudian, yes. Full-time self-employed. And it was a weird thing because I knew that there was plenty of demand and I knew I could do well, but I wasn't real confident in my ability. And I wasn't really confident that I could do anything business-wise. And I didn't have a whole lot of contacts so I could have mentors to rely on. So literally, I felt 100% alone. And so every time I ran into a challenge of any kind, anything that didn't go right or whatever, all I did was get frustrated because I didn't know what to do. And I kept playing the same role over and over again of being frustrated, being frustrated, being frustrated. Well, you can imagine what that would turn into. And it did. It turned into it very, very well. Then comes the financial crisis of 2008. Now, up until that point, most of my clients for the web work were very small nonprofit organizations. That was the niche that I had kind of gotten myself into. And, of course, with the crash in 2008, they all went away. So literally in about a 3-month space, I went from having a nice book of business to almost none, which fit perfectly with the mantra of I'm so frustrated.
I get frustrated. You don't listen to more
things. Absolutely. And did it in spades in a really, really big way. Now, I didn't yet know about law of attraction. I first became aware of the concept law of attraction through The Secret, and I saw The Secret for the first time at that point where the economy had crashed, November 2008, right after all the crisis hit, right? That's when I first saw it. And you can imagine, I was feeling pretty desperate at that point. I didn't know what to do. I could see where the economy was going. Oh, on top of everything else, I was one of the ones who predicted that the economy was going to do that. So that just added to the whole thing, you know? I didn't realize how much I had set myself up. Well, to make a very long story short, I just went through hell for a long, long period of time. And as I was learning about how law of attraction works and trying to understand stuff and fill in gaps, because, you know, The Secret is a nice introduction, but it doesn't really clarify a lot of things you need to know. And I didn't know where to ask the questions because, once again, I didn't have that network of people to talk to. I just floundered for quite some time. Eventually, I decided, well, maybe the best way I can learn this is just by kind of doing it, even though I don't know what I'm doing and I don't understand this stuff. So I figured I'd start a podcast.
You were a pioneer at that era, at that point.
I mean, because I didn't know what else to do. And I figured, well, you know, if I start a podcast, if I have a podcast, then maybe I can contact people who do know this stuff who I don't know and ask them to be my guests. And that way I could learn how does all this stuff work? And that's literally how LOA Today was built. So it was built out of a place of frustration and despair and feeling like I had nowhere to go and not even knowing how to make a living doing it. I wasn't even trying to make a living. I was just trying to figure out the answers to questions. So I thoroughly understand the position of somebody who's coming from a place of lack, because boy, was I in a place of lack. Everything about my entire mental outlook was a place of lack. And I didn't know it. I didn't even understand what that meant.
Yeah. Well, that's the gift of, you know, we talked a lot on Saturday about vibrational flow. And the purpose of low vibration is to manifest unwanted things that catapult us at our best to create something new to solve it and
yes.
and expand in the process. So what exactly. We do in vibrational flow is you get frustrated, you're frustrated, you're frustrated, you're frustrated. ultimately you're going to stay in that recurring vibration of frustration until you manifest a disruption to get you out of it. And it just, the question you have to ask yourself is, how low do you have to go to bottom out and then create that disruption to come back up? And some of us are very stubborn and we have to go really, really low.
And some of us have to go through more than one disruption.
Oh yeah, it's a flow.
That's literally
it's
what I had to do. I had to go through, just kind of on an offhand count, 1, 2, 3, at least 3 or 4 different disruptions, major disruptions, before I finally started to really get that it was all happening in my mind, that I was the one who was creating it all. And even then, I couldn't quite believe it. You know what I mean by that? Like, yeah, I had all this evidence, but this isn't a theory that most people talk about. This is like woo-woo nonsense,
yeah.
Right?
So it's hard to listen to
woo-woo people telling me, you know?
It's so easy to look at someone else. It's so easy to look at a friend or a coworker or a family member and see exactly how they're creating these patterns. It's so easy.
Yeah.
But for us, it's not so easy because we've got ego attached to it. We're in it all the time. We're very often blind to our own vibrational flow and blind to what we're doing to ourselves. Now, take the judgment out of that and appreciate the fact that it's all good because it's all experience, which is why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
No real negative, that we as human beings judge things as negative, that Source does not judge as negative. Source is not judging what political party you're affiliated with. Source is not judging how you treat your body. Source is not judging what you partake in this world. Source isn't judging any of it. And our eternal selves are not judging it.
Yeah.
That's all ego-driven human stuff. Even in the spiritual community, I have found the spiritual community to be just as judgmental as any religion.
Possibly more so.
Possibly more so. You know, how you're, you know, what are you eating?
Yeah.
What are you ingesting? How often are you meditating? You know, there's just so much judgment around all of it. And what I get channeling the stream, which is my connection to Source, like everybody else has, there's no judgment on any of that. And there's no right or wrong way to operate our lives. And we are here having our unique experience, expanding as a being, no matter how we're operating.
Mm-hmm.
When you start thinking of, wow, my eternal self is completely cool with the weight I've put on during COVID. My eternal self is completely cool with, you know, my financial fluctuation, or, you know, if I have a drink every night or not, or if I'm meditating for an hour a day, or if I forget 2 or 3 days, or if I'm slipping or whatever it is, it's all this experience that we're having, and none of us are perfect and we are not here for perfection. And somebody was talking about the Instagram world, how everything is about how beautiful everything is now, how, you know, people have these perfect bodies and they have pictures of their perfect homes and the perfect food they prepare and their beautiful car. I'm really bored with Instagram because it's just all a bunch of BS to me. It's everybody just putting the very best version of them out there. And I know these people. I know people that show pictures of their perfect house and their perfect life and their perfect body. And it seems like the more perfect they look on Instagram, the more screwed up they are in their lives. Everybody's got their thing. None of us are perfect. And I'm certainly, as a spiritual teacher, not going to put myself out there as perfect or enlightened. I get it all now. So I live in perfection and I have no problems. I've solved everything in my life. Taya will help you solve anything in your life you want to solve. But one of the key components of Taya is understanding vibrational flow and the perfection of imperfection, which is what I love about it. And people that practice it absolutely love that. So we can hold appreciation for our failed relationships and our failed businesses and our low bank balance and our bulging waistline and all of it, because it all serves our expansion. And it's just so freeing to think of life like that, instead of getting so caught up into, I've got to save X number of dollars, going back to the question, or right. I've got to, you know, think this way about money. I've got to be in abundance. No, you don't. There's no perfecting any of this stuff. There's really zooming out to a higher perspective of no fear and no judgment, really enjoying the ride that life is. And from there, manifesting a fantastic life experience that looks all sorts of different ways than you might believe from a lower vibrational perspective.
And I would also add to that beautiful statement you just made. I would add the fact that in my experience, no, this is just me. This is just what I went through and what I've gone through so far. There is no one awakening moment. There isn't one moment where my eyes are closed. The next moment, oh, I get it. I see the light. It, nothing even remotely close to that. Wow. It's little things. I pick up a little thing here, a little thing there. It wasn't until like, I don't know, 2015, 2016, 2017, somewhere around there, that it finally dawned on me all of that craziness I went through. This is touching on your point. All that craziness I went through, all of it had like little pieces of skills that I picked up that all fit together to help me create a podcast. If I hadn't learned each one of those pieces, I would not probably have been able to get a podcast, not only get it together, but keep it going. And it was something, if you had looked at my career, you know, on the resume, you would have said, well, where is it? I don't really see where these pieces are. Most of them are so subtle, you have to think about, you know, you have to kind of go back in your own experience in your own life and say, okay, where did I learn how to put together a recording? Where did I learn how to edit a recording? Where did I can point to all the different places where I learned all these things. You know, but there's a whole bunch of stuff I had to learn. And when it came to actually doing a podcast, I already knew how to do all of them. I just didn't never put it all together. I never thought about it that way, you know? So talk about being able to appreciate the stuff that was the difficult stuff. If you had asked me, you know, 15 years ago, can you start thinking about appreciating the stuff that's the difficult stuff? I would have been lost. Like, no idea where to begin on something like that. But as you say, when you have the perspective, and that's kind of what I've gained over the years, is a perspective of what the whole thing is all about. Oh, yeah, I can see where that little experience over there in the midst of that fog gave me a piece. And that little experience over there also gave me a piece. And it just kind of pieces together over time. That's the alignment for me. It's not like a single event.
Well, you tapped into the vibration of podcast.
Yeah.
Once somebody came up with the idea of doing a podcast, and suddenly you have all these other people that are emerging doing podcasts, that creates a podcast vibration. And anyone who's interested in doing a podcast that believes they can, all they have to do is believe they can, and that dials them into that vibration.
Yes.
And suddenly all of the things from their past, all of their things, the gaps that need to be filled in, get filled in. And before you know it, you're doing a podcast, or you're writing a book, or you're creating an app. We've both done all of those things, you know, where you never thought you would be able to do something, and you dial into the vibration of it.
Exactly.
And suddenly it's just done. And then you're moving on to the next one and the next one and the next one. And I remember when people used to make fun of podcasts. You know, YouTube was a joke. Podcasts were a joke.
Oh, yeah.
Anything that you did yourself and you weren't going through the gates of Hollywood
right. To
produce content, or the gates of traditional publishing, was just a joke.
Yeah.
Well, that's all been disrupted now. That's not true anymore. We are all taking control.
Absolutely.
And that is the rise of the collective consciousness, understanding that, wait a minute, we don't need these institutions to tell us what to do or to let us in. You know, Louise Hay, look what she did. She wanted to write a book. Nobody would publish it. So she started a publishing company.
Yeah.
You know, she screw you. I'll just start my own publishing company. I'll publish my books, others, and I'll be one of the biggest names in this genre.
She basically dominates the genre. I mean, she's since passed on, but her company dominates. There's no other company anywhere near hers.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's you're capable of doing anything that you believe that you can do. And if it's not about skills, because the gaps get filled in somehow as long as you hold the belief and you have the tenacity to not give up. And the only thing that, to me, the thing that creates my tenacity is just that unwavering belief that I can, even when obstacles come up. I love overcoming obstacles. I love that. Tell me I can't do something, that's exactly what I'm going to do next. So that creates a drive for me. But having the belief, if I didn't believe that I could, I would probably peter out at some point. And I realize now that anyone that quote unquote fails at anything, they don't fail, they just quit, they give up.
Sure.
That's it. That's it. Because I have a business that I started about 3 years ago in Taya Boot Camp that probably could have gone out of business 3 or 4 or 5 times in the creation of it. You know, there's ups and downs. There's times that it's just like, oh my gosh, we've got more people coming in than we know what to do with. We've got to add this and we've got to do that. And then the next, you know, it seems like 6 weeks later, it's crickets. And I used to be in the home furnishings business. So I understand the ebb and flow and cycle of business, but I didn't, that was very predictable when I was in it. But spiritual coaching was not predictable for me. I didn't know. you know, I'm getting a little better grip on it now that, you know, there's times of the year, like fall is a time that people are really into doing this sort of thing where summer is not. COVID definitely threw a wrench into all that though. And suddenly everybody wanted to do it, which is great.
Right. Sure. But
there's so many times that I could have just said, this is it. I'm done. I'm going to quit. I'm going to go back to XYZ. And I had a really high paying job. And I'll never forget, the big turning point for me was when I was really, really, really in trouble financially in the business, in my business. And I couldn't pay myself. And I was having to reduce, you know, overhead and all this kind of thing. And I was living in a very expensive house because I just maintained my lifestyle. And my rent in that house was $6,000 a month. Oof. And well, I moved from San Francisco where that was a one bedroom apartment. So I moved to Palm Springs. I had a 4-bedroom, 4-bath house with a pool for 6 grand.
Right.
So I had a big personal overhead to pay and I wasn't making any income. And right in the middle of the downturn, I had a headhunter call me, VP position in my old industry, $500,000 a year pay package.
Wow. Yeah.
And I said, no.
Yeah.
I said, no, I said, I will live under a bridge before I will go back to the corporate world. I love, and it renewed me. I love what I'm doing. I will never do anything else. I'm committed to doing this for the rest of my life. That's why I tattooed it on my arm. and I'm not going to do that. And she was so impressed. She asked for my book and she went and got my book and emailed me later, said she loved my book, The Headhunter. So wow. I love that story. But yeah, I could have retreated at that point. And I'm so glad I didn't because the business came back. And that's just my message for anybody regarding anything, is it's dialing into the vibration of and not giving up if you really want it.
And it's a great example too of being willing to leave something behind. I mean, there's no shame. That's one of the things I really had to learn. There's no shame in a business that quote fails. You described it very nicely. It doesn't really fail. You just stop doing it.
I do believe in pivoting to something else. I mean, look how many super successful companies started out. You look what Netflix started out as, and then that model became obsolete and we all thought Netflix would go the way of Blockbuster. Oh my gosh, they didn't though. Look at Netflix now. You know, it's all I have. I don't have cable. I just have Netflix. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just crazy. You know, if you're not giving up and throwing in the towel and sticking to something that maybe isn't working anymore and move to something different, again, keep dialed into that vibration, then you're going to do great no matter what.
Dialed into the vibration. That's the key, I think, right there. Because what you're really saying is, do you like it? Do you enjoy it? Does it float your boat? That's what keeps you going. If you're trying to do it any other way, I've tried all the other ways. None of them work.
I would never, it's funny because I thought about getting in as an entrepreneur, getting into the business that I was in, home furnishings, on my own. And I actually went to venture capitalists and pitched to venture capitalists and none of it ever worked. And I realized now, gosh, I'm so glad that it didn't work because I didn't even like the business that I was in.
Yeah.
I liked it in the beginning. And then I during the recession, got into a scenario where I just made money, more money year after year after year during the recession in the business, even though I didn't like it, my financial abundance was significant. And until I finally jumped out of the airplane and just quit because I couldn't take it anymore. But could you imagine getting into a business that you already don't like as an entrepreneur and trying to stick it out as an entrepreneur? Now I'm just so glad that none of that worked out. That was the universe looking out for me. That was vibrational flow taking care of me.
Well,
the universe doesn't look out for us. We love to say that, but the universe isn't judging positive or negative. The universe is sending us our vibrational match. Our vibrational flow and our focus is what's taking care
of us. Exactly, yeah. And I can't imagine it because I tried to do that and it failed horribly. In fact, I tried to do it multiple times and it failed horribly multiple times.
I have heard success stories of people making lots of money doing the craziest things because they're passionate about it. There was somebody, the person that taught me how to do an online course, she was in this bigger program that teaches people how to do things like that. And their most successful graduate was, I think he taught people how to do a handstand. And he was billing over $1 million a year teaching people online how to do handstands.
If
I remember that story correctly, it was something as specific as that and as far-fetched as that. The guy was making over $1 million doing that.
I'm trying to think who it was. It was Daniel or Louis. One of my co-hosts told the story. Maybe it was you, but it was one of the co-hosts told me a story about a guy who loves clouds and pictures of clouds. And so he created a website where people could upload pictures of clouds for a membership fee. And he makes a huge amount of money offering a website for pictures of clouds.
Yeah. I think like some of the wealth, like one wealthy person, this is a good pivot. They started out making these cement buildings. This was in my hometown, and this was one of the wealthiest people in my hometown. They made these cement buildings for cable television. Mm. And then when cell phones came around, they started making these cement buildings for cell phone towers. And they're the only producer there is or was, multi-billion dollar business, I'm sure, from making these cement buildings.
Right.
You know, what do you do for a living? Oh, I make cement buildings. Right. You know, that sounds exciting. You know? You can make money doing anything. So if you're passionate about something, figure out a way to make money.
The passion. That's the key.
That's the key. That's absolutely
the whole thing. So, all right. Well, we've gotten some good insights and wisdom from David Strickle. Let's get some wisdom and insights from the stream of David. So we're going to let you make your connection. And while doing that, I'm going to remind people you can also get your question answered by the Stream of David just by using the LOA Today app. And if you, of course, have downloaded it, you have that. But if you haven't downloaded it, just go to your app store on your iPhone or your Play Store on your Android phone. Look for LOA Today, and it'll pop right up in the list. And then right there under goodies in the app is where you can find the page, the question page for asking a question of the Stream of David. So feel free to do it. That's what other listeners are doing. And that's what we're going to be drawing upon as the stream connects to David, and we have a whole bunch of stream questions for him today. So it looks like David is making the connection. Should be here in about a minute or so.
We are here.
We have a connection. Hello, stream. Nice talking to you again. Just had a conversation with you over the weekend when we were part of the stream summit. So nice to hear from you again and talk to you again. And our first question comes from a listener who was also participating in that summit, named Jim Corman. And his question is, what thoughts do I need to detune in order to manifest excellent health for my wife? I'm working on taking 100% responsibility for every aspect of my life. So if my wife has chronic illness, there must be something in my vibration that is allowing it, or it would not be so. At least that's what Jim thinks. What do you think, Stream?
You would very much guide anyone who believes that their thoughts are transmuting to another, even someone that they are very close to. We would guide you to zoom out a bit regarding that and understand that while you are deeply connected and you are absolutely what we would describe as vibrational neighbors, there is an entanglement, if you will, of intention and vibration. You are independent strands of consciousness having a human experience. And as an independent strand of consciousness, judging a series of illnesses as wrong or bad or even unwanted for another, it is not harming nor assisting them. Certainly, good feeling thoughts toward another and sending your very best vibrations, if you will, or prayer or however your belief system allows you to send that type of energy to another has a vibration to it and there is some benefit to it. But the individual's vibrational flow and the individual's positioning on the spiral and belief system supersedes anything that would come from another being, even one that is deeply intertwined. Where we guide you is to make peace with her journey, to make peace with her own unique human experience, and make peace with your participation in it, understanding that there is no right or wrong way to operate your lives. There is no right or wrong amount of years to spend. There is no right or wrong way to draw a human life experience to what you would call a conclusion and return to your completed state. There will be a time that you will come to understand that your personal journey and the impact of her journey was simply part of yours, regardless of what the outcome of her current health status is, that her flow and her experience is her experience. and you're having that experience alongside her is yours. And the things that from your human perspective, that in your lower vibrational flow that you judge as negative and unwanted and push against, you are missing the value that is available from it. And the value is not necessarily miraculous healing. We want very much for all of you to understand this, that anything is possible. Miraculous healing to us is not miraculous at all. It is possible. But she is in a state of vibrational flow that is her own personal journey. And we are not here to hold her away from that. We are guiding you to understand that you are not here to hold her away from that. As much as you may want to physically hold her in a state where she is physically with you, we guide you to zoom out on that and to be in appreciation of her flow and her experience and release the fear and judgment around it. We will guide you to this on all topics always, because the more you detune and release fear and judgment on all topics, the more you will find joy in every single experience, including her health.
That's a great answer. I love the way you phrased so much of that, and especially the part about, I'll put this in my words, showing so much respect for what her choices are, for what her particular life path is, and the one that she is quite deliberately choosing, whether she's doing it consciously, unconsciously, whatever, she is quite deliberately choosing that path. And I really think that is very important. You mentioned that there is, my words, some influence, some impact that we have because we live in the same proximity, we're in the same house and all that kind of thing. Talk about that impact. What's the nature of that impact? How does that work?
The impact is essentially how your vibrational flow is going to impact another that is in close physical proximity to you, first and foremost, because you are sharing a space, for instance. And in sharing that space, certainly you are all aware that your vibration has positive and negative impact on another that is with you. There is also a vibrational match occurring, of course. And in this vibrational match, if the two vibrations become disrupted via your focus, you can manifest a vibrational disconnection, even if you were in the physical space. But if your desire is to be in vibrational harmony with one another, sending the higher positive vibrational thoughts and feelings without judgment and without fear, the higher vibrational thoughts and feelings we're speaking of are ones of appreciation of the experience that is being manifested, not one of pushing against and wanting miraculous healing to occur. That is not what we mean when we are sharing that we would guide you to send high vibrational thoughts. It is, these are thoughts of appreciation. These are thoughts of appreciation for what is, rather than thoughts of you must heal to please me and you must heal to be the version of you that I believe you need to be. That is a very different vibration.
Reminds me of the experience that I've had just in the last month or so with our cat who got attacked by the predator. And he has been making a wonderful recovery, but for the first few days there, we weren't sure whether he was going to be able to make it. And I suspect in his conscious mind, he wasn't so sure he was going to be able to make it. He was pretty close to comatose at one point, and he was in very bad shape. Fortunately, he got some good veterinarian help, but nevertheless, it was touch and go. I had to feed him off of my fingertip for quite some time. But I also knew that even though I wasn't, I can't honestly say that I was never afraid. I was afraid at times, but there were also moments where I was able to just get into that pure positive love about him. And I would kind of oscillate, you know, back and forth. And then in those moments where I was feeling that pure love for him, I was basically putting out one message to him. His name is Joy. And I would say, Joy, if you want to recover from this, please take these gifts that we're giving you. I can't force you to take them. It's up to you, but we're trying, these are the lifelines we're trying to throw at you. And here they are. And I would name what they were. And I didn't know whether or not he would grab them. I didn't know if he would put them to use. As it turned out, he did. because his recovery has just been nothing short of miraculous since then. But it was him who made the decision. It was pretty clear. And he made it clear as he was healing, as he was recovering, because since then, literally every opportunity where he and I have been together in the same room, he wants to climb into my lap, rub up against me, and just, you know, get cuddled and held. And this is an outdoor cat. This is a cat that's outdoor, or was outdoors, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, so to me, that says that cat really did get the message. And yeah, this is what he really wanted. And I was helping to reinforce what he really wanted. What was optimal, that's not even the right word. What was essential from my perspective was he had to want it. I couldn't want it for him. And that's a difficult concept when you're dealing with the emotions of it. But for me, it was essential. I couldn't imagine it any other way. So I was glad to hear you talk about how, you know, it has to be in alignment with what the other person wants. Otherwise, it's not going to make a difference.
Your cat's experience is an excellent example. You offered the very best that you had to offer in the scenario, and you were correct. The choice was ultimately his, whether he wanted to return or not. Offering him a point of reentry, of reasons to come back, holds value. But being at peace with the question of the outcome placed you in a vibrational scenario to offer him your very best. This is why we say the very best that you have to offer another is the high vibrational version of you. You needing him to survive to please you, and needing him to survive because you have a need that he fulfills, is a different vibration than being at peace of the outcome that he chooses.
And it's not an easy place to be in, especially when you are dealing with fearful situation.
It is not easy because you were taught to fear separation, and you were taught to fear death. Though it is one thing that is inevitable. This is why we guide you over and over again to question why you fear these things.
Yeah, and I think ultimately what happens is what happened in my case. I kept oscillating back and forth. I'd be afraid for this moment, and then this moment I'd be at peace, and at that moment I'd be afraid, and I just keep going.
Vibrational flow. That is the vibrational flow that we speak of, and you are all in it, and you can certainly, with time and focus and understanding of it, be more at peace with vibrational flow to the point where the negative downward flow is not impacting you perhaps the way that it did. But you have done enough work to where you had a handle on it, to where you were not in the same space that many pet owners would perhaps have been in, where they were simply in the low vibrational flow through the entire experience. And any joy that was available during that time was not experienced whatsoever. And the vibration was kept lower, and the outcome would have likely been negatively impacted by that.
Yeah, that's true. I'm certain that that's true. We also have another question that comes from Janine, and it's very much in alignment with what we're talking about here, so I'm going to bring this one in too. She apparently works with seniors. I'm going to guess in palliative care, but it's only a guess. She says, please explain how my high vibration helps my senior clients to transition.
The high vibrational offering of no fear and no judgment is infectious. You all understand that your vibration is infectious. If someone is in a caregiving position, they are very negative, if not full-blown abusive, of course, that is lowering the vibration for the patient. The same is true for one who is offering a high vibration, of understanding that this is an experience to be had and not to be feared. It is an experience that if you perform your lives the way many humans believe they should, meaning that you live a long period of time and you end up in a scenario where you are winding down your end of life experience, your life experience is an end of life experience at an older age, which is not necessarily everyone's vibrational choice. But for those that are, offering them the very best for that experience of joy in that experience, of joy in the departure, of appreciating where they are, even with their failing bodies. That is a very high vibrational offering to them indeed.
It reminds me of a situation that occurred with my wife's stepmother. her own birth mother had died when she was in her early 20s from a series of strokes. And then later on, her father remarried, and Ruth was the stepmother. And their early relationship wasn't very good, but over time it turned into a very good relationship. And when Ruth got to the point where, because of her own medical situation, she decided to turn down medications that she was on, knowing that would lead to end of life, we went to visit her one last time. And it was a good visit. They had a tearful but joyful farewell between the two of them. And I'll never forget, as we're getting ready to leave her room, I just suddenly had an inspiration to say something to her, to say a particular thing. And so I said it without giving any thought to it. And afterward, I've thought about it a lot. For whatever reason, I decided to say to her, "You're about to engage in a really fun journey." And she gave me this look like, "What are you talking about?" And I'm not really sure why I even said that. I think on some level, I was sensing her own reticence to recognize the joy in it. So I was trying to inspire some joy, but for whatever reason, I said that. And I'll never forget the look on her face. It literally, her entire mood shifted in the space of a half second. And now all of a sudden she was focusing on it in a way that I don't know exactly what it meant to her, but it was quite different from the way it had been 5 seconds before. So I just wanted you to kind of comment on that. Tell me what you think may have been going on there.
There was a vibrational alignment that inspired you to offer a thought process based on all of your learnings that was a bit foreign to her. But as our promise to you, in her departure, the words that you offered came into such great clarity for her that there was great resonance. And that offered a very high vibrational transition for her, and ultimately offered that high vibration right back to you.
Okay. Right. And then we also have another question. This is our third and last question that we have for this week's show from Avi. Now, Avi is the person you may remember who previously asked about how to live in a totalitarian society, how to deal with the fact that, you know, you have a government who's acting like a big brother and cracking down and stuff and so forth. And you gave some really good advice to him. He's also asked a couple of questions since then. This time, he's asking a question that I have to admit, I never expected to have asked or answered here on the show, but what the heck? We'll pass it to you and see what you have to say. He says, "I was wondering about crop circles. Are the perfect crop circles made by extraterrestrial beings?" So what do you have to say for AV?
There are things that occur on your planet that are what you may call a result of a visitation from another world. However, the things that are happening on planet Earth are of the vibration of planet Earth. There are beings and things of different times in your linear time thinking that still have a present vibration for you. The vibration is ever present. There have been technologies that existed on your planet that you at this time that you are perceiving, your scientists are not yet aware of. So there are aspects of your planet that you cannot yet explain. The original circles and things like that started out as something that was an actual discovery and have been replicated. This idea of what many of you would label a hoax is very, very common. You all are so aware of something else that is just below the surface of your reality that you use your imaginations to bridge the gap. And we very often guide you to do this in your lives, in your process of creation. And when you see things that are supposedly otherworldly, UFOs, crop circles, things of this nature that are created by human beings in your time as a hoax, that is born of a desire to create that reality. And in creating that reality, understanding that there is something of that nature that actually exists or has been that your human mind is trying to bridge the gap. The one who is putting on the hoax is perhaps not even aware of the fact that they are are experiencing an awareness of something that they cannot explain. And they are physically creating their version of that from their current physical human perspective as a hoax. But in their mind, they are tapping into another energy from another time that created something very like, much like that. There are not a lot of human words for us to describe these things to you. We will sum it all up by stating that the things on your planet that are unexplained, that intrigue you so much, are not fake. They are really there. There are endless layers of reality that you are operating in within the energetic realm, which you are in. It is not something that is off in the heavens somewhere. And your awareness of that drives you to create things that replicate that are seen as a hoax, and they are human creation, but they did not originate as human creation. They are an expression of the energetic realm that is being expressed physically in a way that you can all experience them, and they seem unexplainable, yet eventually you will all figure out how to explain them.
That's interesting. Because among other things, what you're saying is we're gonna find the solution. We're gonna answer where these crop circles are coming from, or what they're all about, or what they have for us, what information they have for us, which is encouraging. It's like, okay, well, that's pretty cool.
You are ever evolving, and look at how much your technology and intelligence has evolved in a very short period of linear time. Time is speeding up on your planet. This disruption that is occurring on your planet that you are all in the midst of is a coming together like never before on your planet, and you're all coming and questioning things. We speak of this often. And in questioning, you are causing a disruption, and the disruption is causing a crumbling of your institutions. But in the crumbling of your institutions, there will be new things that will rise up that will allow you to operate on a higher level of thought. And in this higher level of thought, you will make new discoveries. But there will be an ebb and flow to this. As much as your science creates the pathway to understanding the energetic realm, there are going to be many others who are afraid of that and not ready for it and pushing against it. And this is a cycle that you are always going to see in a physical environment. But that cycle, the ones who are pushing against are actually driving the ones that are pushing.
Yeah, true. And speaking of scientists, quite possibly our most revered scientist over the last 100-150 years is Albert Einstein, from whose teaching a lot of the material comes for understanding quantum mechanics, which those of us in LOA circles often refer to when we're trying to understand how these energy situations work and how the whole thing operates. One of the things that comes out of Einstein's theories is the idea of what we might generically call space warping or time warping. And I saw something just recently about how modern scientists have been able to verify one aspect of Einstein's theory, which is that there is a vortex of this this warping of space around the planet Earth. And so I saw that word, I said vortex. Well, I wonder if there's a similarity here to what we call the vortex, the energy vortex, in which we create the various things that we're trying to draw into our lives. So I guess I'm asking, is this just a quirk of the English language, or are we talking about some similarity in vortexes here?
There are certain words such as vortex and quantum that are used to describe the energetic realm. And truly, this is a step in the direction of understanding it. The energetic realm is not operating in linear time. The energetic realm is a realm of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And consciousness is evolving and expanding, but everything that has ever occurred and everything that is ever going to occur is occurring simultaneously, but it's not stagnant. And that's where the bridge needs to be gapped for your scientists to understand that though all of these occurrences are simultaneous and there is no linear time, there is expansion of thought. And the expansion of thought is what you're becoming more and more aware of as human beings. And the expansion of thought speeding up is what has allowed you to create so much technology in such a short amount of linear time, because you've created this expansion. This is why your world for lack of better terminology, is rewriting itself faster and faster and faster and faster. It is like you're hitting the refresh button more often now that you're aware of it.
The refresh button. That's an interesting analogy to use, similar to the refresh button on a computer. We're refreshing the planet? Is that what we're saying?
You are refreshing the environment that you are perceiving. And you are coming to understand that planet Earth and its atmosphere is a perceived environment of the collective consciousness of its inhabitants' creation and continual recreation. Everything is continually being recreated, recreated, recreated. That's why you have vibrational flow. And in this recreation, there is evolution, there is expansion, there is new thought, there are shifts, there is change. And all of that change creates this tension, this ebb and flow tension that actually drives more expansion. This is why we say that you are not racing toward a utopian society, because if you are in a utopian society where you all were on the same page about all topics and simply sat around and agreed with each other all the time, there would be no more planet Earth, because there would be no purpose for it, because there would be no expansion offered. As much as you all believe you despise the vitriol and the disagreements and the polarity that exists, that is becoming more and more pronounced, of course. Think about a world void of that and what growth would come from that. When you think of yourselves as eternal beings here having a very temporary human experience for the expansion of, how much expansion would you have experienced in your linear lifetimes had you never had any challenges? Had you never had to make a decision between A or B? Had you just manifested every single thing that you've ever wanted from the beginning?
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a wonderful point. And as I have thought about that in the past, what I've realized is what would probably happen is we would create stuff, but it wouldn't stick around because we'd lose interest in it. Because if we're constantly recreating, like if this tablet computer exists because I keep believing that it's a tablet computer and everybody around me keeps believing that it's a tablet computer, well, then it's going to keep existing because we believe it's a tablet computer. But at the moment that we lose interest in it, at the very least, we throw it away. And I ask myself, well, if nobody thinks about it as a tablet computer anymore, does it continue to be a tablet computer? I'm inferring that it doesn't. It just kind of dissipates.
The reason that you are continually creating better versions of is because innately you understand that there is no stagnation of energy. That energy is transmuting to something else, but from a human perspective, it is expanding or it is dying. If it is dying, it is simply going towards something different. If your energy as a human being is dying, you are preparing yourself to manifest in another form.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So every single thing that you create, which includes your entire planet, operates exactly the same. You are either encountering struggle and coming back from the struggle and coming back from the storm and coming back from the disaster and coming back from the brink of dissolution, if you will, and creating a better version of. You are doing this continually in your lives and across your planet. The entire environment that you have created is continually rewriting itself and rewriting itself and rewriting itself. The changes are very often minute because there is a flow of vibration. This is what keeps you all in your life patterns that you're on. We refer to this as the default vibration. So there's a default vibration of you. There's a default vibration of humanity. There's a default vibration of planet Earth and on from there into infinity. And Earth is just a speck of that. But you are perceiving yourselves on Earth as humans at this time, having a linear experience for the expansion that is offered in the perception of linear experience.
That's a good way to wind up the discussion today. So once again, you've led us very nicely down to some mind-bending paths, and I've enjoyed the bending of the mind. So thank you very much for that.
Sure.
And I'm going to let you and David to your disconnect so that we can talk to David again. But wow, very cool. This is part of why I like talking to the stream so much, because I get to explore stuff that I don't even know where it's going, and I get some really cool answers out of it. So not if only David knew what we were talking about, because he's always a little bit woozy when he comes out.
I'm coming back. I am going to have to create, we have a glossary already. There's a Stream of David glossary of stream terms. And there's more words that I need to create and give a definition for the stream to use, because they're showing me things and I'm semi-present thinking, how the hell do I explain that?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. But that's why I love coming on the show, because the questions are just phenomenal, and I get so much out of it. Just like, wow, I never saw that before. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I really get deep into this understanding that there's so much more going on that we are not allowing ourselves yet to be aware of, but it's okay because we're going to evolve to the awareness. And as soon as we evolve to the awareness of something, we're going to start seeing it.
Yeah.
And it's true, because think about, I'm a car person. I love cars. And whenever I get a new car, or I think about a certain color of car that I like, I suddenly start seeing it all the time.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Or I wasn't seeing it before. And that's very true. When something comes into our awareness, there's not suddenly more of it. We're just aware of it, so we're seeing more of it. Well, all of these otherworldly things, I know that came up, these otherworldly things that we perceive are things that are already here that we're not yet ready to see as a collective consciousness. And the people that go looking for them, the people that are out with their telescopes at Area 54 or whatever that is, they're seeing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We call them kooks. Oh, they're just some kook that's all into that stuff. And they're seeing that. But are they kooks, or are they seeing evidence of something that they know is there and their belief is so strong that they are creating the connection that's allowing them to see something that other people are not yet able to see?
And interestingly enough, science actually can explain to us that phenomena you just described, the phenomenon of once you find a new car, you see the car everywhere. It's called the RAS, the reticular activating system. It's in the back of the head at the brain stem, and it's literally the filtering mechanism without which we would go insane because of all the data that comes in through our bypass.
There's too much to take in around us, and that's when people start asking about other lives and other, you know, experiences, the stream always comes in and says, well, which one?
Yeah,
right. You're infinite. You're infinite. You cannot comprehend. And sometimes people that do past life regression get really angry at us for saying that. And at the end of the day, if somebody's coming in and doing past life therapy with you and you're giving it the power and it's helping you, do it.
Sure.
Do it. There's nothing. There's one thing about the stream. Nothing's wrong.
Mm.
You know, there's nothing wrong with being a Christian. There's nothing wrong with being a Muslim. There's nothing wrong with being an atheist. There's nothing wrong with believing in anything, because all of it is as real as we make it for us. It's all real. It's all real. People ask about Jesus all the time. Was Jesus Christ a real person or not? And you know, the answer the stream said one time is that we have created this person, and it's real because it's been created and it's believed in. And therefore that deity is very real for those that believe in and give it the power. And this whole idea of, well, did he really walk the earth or did he not? And all of this kind of stuff doesn't even matter.
Right.
Because we're creating the reality. So believe in whatever you want to believe in, as long as it's helping you. And you know, in my opinion, as long as you're not hurting anybody else about it, do it. Do what works for you. Always, always, always. Because there's so much more going on than we can comprehend and perceive. We might as well pick and choose the things that actually help us in our lives, whatever that is. And we're not all the same.
I sometimes like to mess with people's minds a little bit. So if I get somebody who asks that question or tries to posit the idea, Jesus was a real person, or they try to defend it in some way, or they're just inquiring, what do you think? Was Jesus a real person? My reply is kind of similar to yours, although maybe a little bit more sardonic, because what I'll say is, okay, well, let's assume that he was a real person. What does that do for you? And then I get this blank stare. They don't know what to do with it. They just thought it was important, which is really
kind of fun. Because you're told. Yeah. Luckily for me, I questioned everything early on, and then that brought me full circle to not needing to question anymore.
Mm.
then I realized that, because I used to have this saying that, you know, BS me. I used to say the real world. I don't know how profane we get on your podcast, but BS makes the world go round. I used to say it was very cynical. I was very cynical in my 20s. And then I stopped saying that because I really came to understand that, well, that's true just because we all create our own reality.
Yeah.
So if we make it true for us, that's why you're never going to get, you know, we're seeing all of this vitriol with politics right now, with the election in the United States. I know people are outside the United States, but from what I understand, they're also paying attention to this election.
Attention gets paid to U.S. elections.
Oh, I know. The people outside the U.S., that's the first thing they want to talk about when I go on a Zoom meeting with people outside the country is, wow, what's going on over there? It's crazy there. But, you know, the people that are on one side that are trying to convince the other side, and I'm just laughing, thinking, why are you bothering with that? Because their reality is their reality for them. They believe it. They're obviously very passionate about it. And you're over here thinking, I'm the one that's going to change them all. I'm going to come up with these three facts, you know. No, you're not. You're not going to change their perception of their reality. And if it's working for them, great.
It reminds me of a science fiction fantasy series of novels by J.R.R. Tolkien, Lord of the Rings. And if you've ever read that, there's a little poem that comes with it. The Dark Lord's ring has a little inscription on it. And the inscription, when translated into English, says, one ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them. I mean, that's pretty much kind of what they're trying to say. I'm going to bind you to my way of thinking.
That's right. Which is what politics is all about.
Pretty much, yeah. Right. So there's a nice dark way to end the episode.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that you don't have to participate in any of it. It only affects you as much as you allow it to affect
you. That is truth. Yeah.
And we're not here to save the world from itself.
Well, yeah.
That's comforting to me. The whole idea that we're eternal beings and that it's not my place to try to go and save the whole world from itself. That
nor
everyone's
here
having
saving.
Their own unique experience and I need to just...
To me, that was the biggest one, because I was also really big into politics when I went through all that craziness I was telling you about before. And I didn't realize that the reason I was into all that was because I was just dealing with my own lack of confidence in myself. But nevertheless, that's what I was doing. In the process of learning all of this, that's what it really meant to me. It's not that the world isn't broken or that it's not my job to fix it. It doesn't need fixing. Fixing isn't part of the equation. It was never part of the equation. The only reason it got in there was because I put it there, and that was it.
Yeah. I know people. I talk to lots of people, you know, all day long, every day via Zoom, or podcasts, and I encounter people that think the world is just this beautiful, amazing, wonderful place, and their lives are splendid. And I talk to other people who think that the world is coming to an end. It's horrible. It's awful. I can't wait to get off this planet. I was never supposed to be here in the first place. I don't know why. You know, I'm from the planet Zortog and I'm not supposed to be. You know, I hear all of it. I hear all of it and I let everybody have their opinion. And I would much rather enjoy what I know and what is, find joy every day of my life. And that's what I'm all about now. I just want to be joyous every day of my life, whatever that looks like.
Well, I'm with you, and I want to thank you for spreading the joy with us as you do every Tuesday, because it certainly gives me a lift. I know it gives listeners a lift. I could tell because of the questions they send in. So
yeah, I love the questions here, and I was somewhat aware today, and they were good questions. They were
good. Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you also for inviting me last Saturday, and I'm definitely looking forward to having you come by next Tuesday. So keep on coming by, okay?
I will.
All right. So good stuff. Thank you very much. Thank you to our live streamers who are very quiet. They're listening and they are listening intently, but they're very quiet in the discussion. So I think we had them really thinking there. So well done, David. And thank you especially to our podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.